The moonlight shone down on the place unhindered. The gnarled parapets jagged upwards like a bony hand of icy indifference. In the background, there was a pigeon. Who knew how long the place had stood there? 40 years? 50 years? Tempus in memoria, i.e. always? But it was a bad place. That much was certain. A very bad place indeed.
Hello, America, how are you? Hello, I'm Jeff Heatherly.
I'm Nick Melton.
Weird pause. And this is the Original Unoriginal Podcast. Welcome once again. Let me put that phrase in a different order. Let's do that. Well, but I think it's appropriate, though, because today we're coming at you with a very monumental edition of the Original Unoriginal Podcast. We are starting something brand new, something that's been in the works for a very, very long time. It's been talked about offhand and sometimes on hand. What? For probably the entire length of the show. And this is, of course, the first installment of what I like to call the best TV blank of all time. Because it could encompass a season of a show, an entire series, a really good episode, whatever it may be, it'll be the best TV blank of all time. That's the plan. Are you feeling?
I didn't realize that your plan was so broad.
Yeah, it could be anything. Because the fact of the matter is, we've been doing this show for almost 4 years now, 3 years technically. Yeah, 3 years. I can't count. The point is, it's been a long time. And the fact is, I am as big on TV as I am on movies, and all we've done is movies. You've got Cinemantics, which sort of doubles our load of movies. It's time television got its due, especially when it's as great as some of the things we're going to be talking about.
Indeed.
Like our first selection. So, ladies and gentlemen, from 2004, yes?
Yes.
From 2004, originally airing on Channel 4 in the UK, this is Garth Marenghi's Dark Place.
Awesome.
Awesome, yes. Only 6 episodes, so I thought...
It's criminal.
It's criminal, but at the same time, it's appropriate.
It's very British concept.
It's very British, and honestly, had it gone on any longer, it might have...
Suffered.
Yeah.
I feel like the IT crowd now is on, what, its 4th or 5th season?
It'll be starting its 5th season this fall.
Which is... That in itself is going on much longer than a lot of other British shows
It's do. Still amazing, though.
I know. I'm just saying, like, for it to go on that many seasons...
Yeah.
...is kind of astounding. And when you consider that each season is only 6 episodes, that's still, like... only equivalent to 1 season in the United States.
Well, I mean, British television is a massive argument against the American television system of, like, 20-some episodes every season.
Because when you only have 6 episodes, it forces you to pick the best scripts so that every episode is consistently high quality.
Exactly.
Whereas in American television, it's like... Oh, we've got, like, 20 episodes, so we can have a couple crappy ones in between our amazing ones, you know?
Yes. So, but when it comes to Britain, they always give us the best. Because I've always said, and it proves more and more true every time I discover something new, even the worst British thing is often better than the best American thing.
That's true.
It happens more often than not. And Garth Marenghi's Dark Place is no exception. So shall we talk a little bit about the history of this show?
Yeah, we should. Garth Marenghi's Dark Place originated as a series of stage shows that started at the Edinburgh Festival in 2000. I believe the first one was called Garth Marenghi's Fright Night, written by Matthew Holness and Richard Ayoade, who are basically the masterminds for all Garth Marenghi stuff.
It's true.
Alice Lowe, Holness, and Ayoade starred in the original, so you hadn't yet gotten the character of Dr. Sanchez, which is rather unfortunate.
It's true.
But you still had those three. Won the Perrier Award in 2001, and people really liked it. They thought it was a great spoof. It was originally spoofing Stephen King.
Of course.
Like, back in the 80s, like the show is a parody of, like, they call it the rampant egotism of mastermind authors. You know, like Stephen King's Sleepwalkers, King's The Golden Years, Dean Koontz's... whatever.
Mary Higgins Clark's It Could Happen to You.
Exactly.
That's not a real thing, by the way.
There was a sequel called Garth Marenghi's Netherhead, still with no Matt Berry, but who plays Dr. Sanchez on the show.
Yes, indeed.
That was in 2001. That also won the Perry Award, I think. And then the show came on in 2004, so they let a few years pass.
And of course, we're only 5 minutes into the episode, and the fan is already kicking on. So let me go ahead and get the apology out of the way. The fan is on. I'm sorry, listeners. We're going to fix this. Let's move on to awesome things, like talking a bit more about Dark Place.
Yes.
The basic idea of this show is that it is a show within a show, oftentimes within another show. The idea is there was a show produced in the early 1980s based on the ideas of this horror author, Garth Marenghi, played by Matthew Holness. And it was 6 episodes that the network pulled the plug on airing shortly before they were intended to air.
Because they claimed the scripts were so out there, so revolutionary and...
so goddamn crazy.
Exactly.
Yes.
When in reality, it's just the worst show ever made.
Exactly. And now, apparently, Channel 4 is experiencing a massive creative drought and have no choice but to air these episodes. Yeah. And where it becomes a show within a show is that, of course, Garth Marenghi, played by Matthew Holness, introduces every episode, and then we go into our show, wacky credits and hilarity to...
And interspersed with interviews from the cast and...
The cast within the cast.
Yeah.
Should we talk about the cast?
Yeah, there are only, like, four people who only, really need mention.
Which is great, because we usually have too many people to talk about. But let's talk about these great four people. We have Matthew Holness playing the creator of this entire universe, Garth Marenghi, and, of course, his television character, Dr. Rick Daglas, M.D., who's a windbag in both fictional and non-fictional forms.
It is. I like how on the Wikipedia page they describe it as Matthew Holness as Garth Marenghi, author, dreamweaver, visionary, plus actor.
Yes, as he introduces himself.
Because that's how he introduces himself in the credits
yes. Of
the show, and it's awesome. It says here that Dag is a Vietnam and Falklands War veteran and former warlock. He also keeps a Magnum revolver on him at all times. I think that backstory was probably established in the plays, because you don't hear any of that in the show.
I mean, we know he likes to fire a gun.
But then he says, oh, I hate using these things.
Bullshit.
Yeah.
Second bill, we have the co-creator of the show and a fellow who's been around in a lot of other things, Mr. Richard Iowade as Dean Lerner, Garth's publisher, and also his character within the show, Thornton Reed, the head of the hospital. I think he's the chief surgeon.
No, he's just an administrator.
But he used to be the chief surgeon, didn't
yeah,
he?
But yeah, but now yeah. He's old. He's Richard Iowade,
yes.
So he looks like he's 28 no matter what age he
is. It's true.
Richard Iowade in real life is 33, so not that much. Yeah, he was about 28 when the show came out. So.
And Richard Iowade, I mean, a lot of people know him. He's currently very, very famous for playing the part of Maurice Moss on the IT Crowd, but just to get a little bit more history, and we should have done this with Matthew Holness, like all these people, like this show is cast not just in terms of the main cast, but in terms of guest cast with just a cavalcade of British comedy superstars. Matthew Holness, Garth Marenghi himself, he was in a number of sketch comedy series, very notably a show called Bruiser, which co-starred Mitchell and Webb. David Mitchell and... Is it David Webb? Because I've never figured out what Webb's first name is.
I do not know.
But you know who David Mitchell is, right?
Robert Webb.
Robert Webb. Okay, David Mitchell, Robert Webb. Who else was on that show?
Martin Freeman.
Martin Freeman, yeah. But
and people Ricky Gervais, who was a writer, not so much an actor.
But the point is, Bruiser's a fantastic series. Matthew Holness was a great part of that. And of course, Mitchell and Webb went off and did all their various things. Peep Show. And
that Mitchell and Webb look.
That Mitchell and Webb look. There's another That Mitchell and Webb something out there, but I forget what it is. But it all starts here. And Richard Iowade is, of course, a very constant
I might even consider him one of the rising geniuses of British comedy.
Oh, absolutely.
Because apart from being heavily involved in this show, he's done the IT Crowd, and now he made a movie called Submarine.
Yes.
Which is supposed to be, I haven't seen it yet, but...
it was a big hit at Sundance.
A big hit at Sundance, and everyone is just raving about how great it is.
First trailer came out about a couple weeks ago.
And it looks awesome.
Looks fantastic, yes.
So he's got it.
Yeah.
So.
Richard Iowade, of course, also participated in the first, or the only, hopefully only, American attempt at an IT Crowd remake, playing his same part, Maurice Moss, opposite Joel McHale, who went on to be on Community, and is just made of awesome.
Yeah. I mean, even though Joel McHale is arguably too sexy or whatever for the part...
Of Roy,
I would have loved to see Richard Iowade and Joel McHale act off each other.
I mean, they were great together, but the pilot that everyone's seen on YouTube was definitely just a shot-for-shot remake.
Kind of like The American Office, though, which went on to be better than the British one, in my opinion.
Absolutely. Third build, we have a fella who's just a mastermind in his own right, a fellow by the name of Matt Berry, who plays the part of Todd Rivers, and his character within the show, Dr. Lucian Sanchez, even though he's not remotely Hispanic, I don't think.
It says here, improbably handsome, with the disconcerting habit of losing lip sync, with coiffured hair and a voice an octave lower than it should be. He generally uses an automatic pistol with a backup in a leg holster in case his original turns on him.
Yeah, we'll be talking about that wonderful scene coming up.
I think Matt Berry is also a genius.
Yes, he is.
He is hysterical on the IT crowd, and he's arguably even more so on this show. Because almost all of Matt Berry's roles involve some sort of weird speech patterns or speaking voice.
And a really strong sexual appetite.
And the way that he looks, he kind of looks kind of schlumpy in real life.
Yeah.
So this improbable personality paired with this unlikely looks and these weird voice things that he does always throws you a little bit off guard, and it's always hysterical. And he's got his own podcast, too, which is bizarre.
It's very bizarre. It's very Matt Berry.
Yeah, I love Matt Berry.
And then fourth build, we have playing the part of Madeline Wool and her character within the show, Dr. Liz Asher. We have Alice Lowe, who, and we should talk a bit more about Matt Berry in a moment, but Alice Lowe, she's been around on British television for a while. She's very notably, she made a guest appearance on the IT Crowd in one episode.
She's been in The Mighty Boosh also. She was in Snuffbox, which is Matt Berry's TV show.
Oh, yes, he had a sketch show of his own for a short time. Yeah.
Annually retentive. Ha ha ha.
It's honestly kind of it's also become kind of almost a joke that if you're a British comedian, especially in the modern day, you will get a sketch comedy show at some time.
Oh, yeah. She was also in Hot Fuzz.
Oh, how about that?
Yeah. Boom. And she was in, she was with Steve Coogan in his Alan Partridge and Other Less Successful Characters tour.
Oh, all right.
So, that tour wasn't particularly well received, but it's cool to know that she was with, working with Steve Coogan.
But Alice Lowe, Madeline Wool is just like, it's all about the hair there. she's got probably the most 80s hair on this show.
Oh, yes.
And it's very, you know, it's a big departure from Alice Lowe herself, she's bloody gorgeous, but she's hilarious on this show. And just, you know, they're all great. This is an amazing cast. And then we have guest stars like...
I do want to mention a couple people. We actually thought that these two were related, but I don't think they are. There's Kim Noble, who appears in every episode as Jim.
Is he the ginger fella?
He's a hospital worker whose main function is to simply listen to Daglas reel off a lengthy speech and respond with a yes or other
monologue. So he's the guy with the pro.
And Noble's real comedy partner, Stuart Silver, who is the extra, quote-unquote, a character whose name is unknown and who has been a doctor, receptionist, keyboard soloist, and barman. So he's, shorter one.
So he's the one with the Jufro.
Right, and Kim Noble is the taller one with the chops.
Right on. But also guest stars, though. You got to talk about guest stars, because they are plenty, and they are all huge.
Yeah, Graham Linen, who created IT Crowd, is in there as a hospital porter. And Stephen Merchant, co-creator of The Office, plays a chef in one of the episodes.
We also have on a recurring role Julian Barrett of The Mighty Boosh and his comedy partner Noel Fielding in one of the episodes. Noel Fielding, who also is famous for playing the part of Richmond on the IT Crowd.
Yeah, all these people just sort of interact with each other on their respective
They're kind
shows.
Of the British Apatow gang, in a way.
Yeah,
because they're all doing all this kind of stuff together.
Yeah.
If one of them's in something, one of the others will be in it, too. Basically, that's the point.
Yeah.
But yeah, just an amazing cast, amazing guest cast. But let's talk about episodes
here. Before we even get to episodes, I feel we should talk about the production of the show. It's supposed to be an 80s show.
Early 80s.
And we'd be remiss if we didn't mention how spot on the production of the show
is. I don't know how they managed to do it, but they have managed to capture that weird graininess, not just of image, but of sound. Like, if you were to put a tape of a show you taped in 1985... in your VCR right now, this is what that show... It's absolutely identical. It's perfect.
Right. For some reason, the show was being a parody, but it succeeded in sporting a very authentic and realistic 80s feel to the point that many people who saw the show for the first time initially believed that it really was an 80s show.
That's kind of cool.
And, I mean, they did some other stuff to make it look really 80s, like that Channel 4 logo at the beginning of every
episode.
It's
the Channel 4 logo from way back when.
Yeah. They distort the music.
Yes.
So that it sounds like it's recorded on tape reels. And they use, like, old 80s, like, analog synth sounds. I don't know how they got the texture of the film stock to look so grainy.
I mean, I think part of it is just the fact that, like, up until they started using HD, that British television always had that kind of grain to it.
Right. And I think part of the reason the show only lasted 6 episodes is because to recreate all this was really expensive.
I'm sure it did, but in addition, I think they put it on at a really shitty time of night, too. I think they put it on at, like, 1 a.m. on Mondays or something.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, so, like, it didn't really have a chance. But it was big enough to have a spinoff. Later on, starring Richard Iwata reprising his role as Dean Lerner, called Man to Man with Dean Lerner. It's a talk show.
I want to mention a thing about the music. The guy who wrote it, Andrew Hewitt, actually got nominated for a BAFTA for his work on this show.
How about it?
Gritty BAFTA.
Gritty BAFTA.
Gritty BAFTA. And he also wrote the score to Submarine.
How about it?
So, and also Man to Man with Dean Lerner.
Well, fantastic.
Boom. Yeah, he's getting around on the
British. This guy, he absolutely captures the 80s score. The sets on this show, you said it looks like a soap opera set. Absolutely, it looks like what General Hospital would have looked like in 1985.
Right.
Like, it's absolutely perfect. Sometimes the badness, if you will, of the show, it never gets, like, too much, but there are some scenes where they really amp it up. Like, there's a chase scene in one episode where, like, they land on boxes in the middle of the forest.
Right.
Like, it's a wacky, wacky show. But, of course, are you ready to move into episodes
Yes.
now? So what we're going to do here, just for future reference, as it is part of the best TV blank of all time.
Last time you can, I think it's just best TV show.
The best TV series of all time, yeah.
It's a new concept. We'll iron it out.
Yeah, but from now on, I'll just say the point is TV blank. That
Indeed.
Was a waste of time. Anyway, let's move on to episodes. And there are only 6, so we'll get through them pretty quickly, but we're going to talk about them individually, briefly each time. We'll start with the pilot, which is entitled Once Upon a Beginning. The plot is that the character of Liz Asher, played by Madeline Wohl, played by Alice Lowe, comes to Dark Place Hospital for the first time, and found out that she has psychic abilities.
In an extended scene where she's grabbing Matt Berry's hand and he just screams for like a minute and a half.
Yes.
Oh, I love it. I'm going to try and avoid just quoting my favorite bits.
This show is so like, every line is gold.
But half of it is the delivery, like, and the fakeness of it. Like, the episode begins with her walking down a hallway, and she sees something through a doorway, and you see a pair of hands come through the doorway and toss a cat at her.
Not only that, she bends down to pet the cat before we even see it.
Right, and then she's petting it, and the cat, like, is looking at her, and you hear this booming voice on the soundtrack.
It's Matt Berry.
Just leave!
Just leave,
that's what it is. It's like, oh, funny, that cat just told me to leave.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's full of really weird, stupid dialogue like that.
Yeah, and when the episode goes on, the basic plot of this episode is that a former patient and friend of Dr. Rick Douglas, MD, played by Matthew Holness, who plays Garth Marenghi, who plays Dr. Rick Douglas, MD. I'm going to have to get used to that. He has come in and he's developed psychic abilities of his own, has tapped a little too much into the dark arts, and I don't even really know, I don't really want to spoil the big thing that happens to him, but let's just say things get messy.
Yeah, they
and
do.
Hilarity ensues.
I mean, it's a great pilot, basically, because it sets the tone of the show so well. The plots get wackier, but everything that you need to know about what the show is in place by the pilot.
Yes.
Like, the weird, bad acting of Richard Iowade, where he's always looking at the camera.
Because the idea is that he's Dean Lerner, and he's just a publisher, and he's never acted before.
Yeah, so he's just sort of in there, and he, like, awkward edits, like, it'll show him doing something, and then the next shot, he won't be holding the object he was holding a minute before.
Right.
Like, he'll be in a different spot, like, on the set, just awkwardly editing back and forth, like, that sort of thing.
One of the other great things that's introduced in the pilot, and it's a common thread throughout the series, is utter sexism.
Oh, yeah.
Alice Lowe is the butt of so many jokes in this show, it's ridiculous.
Oh, especially in episode 4, which we'll get to.
Yes.
But I mean, like, just to continue, there's one example I want to use.
Okay.
Like, there's a shot where Dean Lerner is holding a shovel in the hallway, and then they cut to the next shot of him, and he's holding a cup instead.
I've never noticed that before. Is that... He is! Oh my god! I just thought about that.
Like, that sort of thing is rampant on this show.
Yes.
It's perfect. I love it.
Yes.
Anyway, continue.
Well, I mean, all I just wanted to say was, yeah, the sexism is there. It's powerful. It's ridiculous. And getting progressively so as we keep going. Are you ready to go to episode 2, I guess?
Sure.
Episode 2 is entitled Hell Hath Fury.
Which is actually a pretty good title for an episode.
Yeah, it is. And it's
yet also at the same time being pretty silly.
It is. This episode, in many ways, is kind of the spiritual sequel to the pilot, because it furthers the idea of Liz Asher's psychic abilities.
Right.
Where she's just driven to an absolute psychotic break.
Because she can't get chicken for dinner.
Because she can't get chicken for dinner, and the men are treating her badly. And so she just loses her mind and basically just turns the entire hospital onto itself.
Right.
Yeah, like, everything is taking on the staff. There's flying objects everywhere. Just hilarity ensues, and it's all about just getting her to calm down, basically.
Basically, yeah.
There are so many great set pieces in this episode with the flying objects and the moving objects. We've got to talk about the flying gun.
We do. Oh, God. Where to begin with this one? The flying gun. They're in the basement for whatever reason.
Right.
They have a temp with them who...
is American.
Is American for some reason. That always kind of throws me.
Yeah. Like,
why would there be an American temp in this random English hospital? Like, I don't remember exactly where the show is set. I don't know if it's a fictional
town. It's set in Romford.
Is that a real place?
No, it's not. At least I don't think it is. Romford is the setting that not only do they use it here, but Romford is the setting that... Matthew Holness as Garth Marenghi uses as a setting for all of his projects.
Right.
Not, the TV series, his novels that he writes, which we've got to talk about some of those novels.
Oh, we will, yeah.
The novels, for the stage plays that he did, the Fright Night and Netherhead, those were both set in Romford. And also, there's an episode of Man to Man with Dean Lerner, in which Matthew Holness reprises the role of Garth Marenghi as a guest on Man to Man with Dean Lerner, and he shows a clip from a movie he's made. War of the Wasps, in which not only is the movie set in Romford, but they are all basically playing the exact same characters. So it's Garth Marenghi as Rick Sanchez, not Rick Sanchez, Rick, that's a governor, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
That is a governor. But what a combination. You know, Matthew Holness is Rick Douglas, Matt Berry as Lucien Sanchez, and Richard Ayoade as Thornton Reed.
Thornton Reed.
Thornton Reed. Get me, Reed!
Love it.
Yes. Rick Sanchez. He must be talking about me. I don't know how I feel about that. Politics. Jeff, stop dragging this horrible joke at it. Wasn't it funny the first time? Let's keep talking about Hell Hath Fury.
Yes.
The gun scene. We haven't even gotten to that.
Right. Well, he gets hit in the face with an iron, like a clothes iron. And he sees it again in the hallway, and he just shoots the crap out of it. And he unloads all the bullets into the iron. And then the telekinesis rings the gun out of his hand and flips it around to point at him. And, no wait, that's not how it works.
No, that is exactly...
Not yet.
All right, yes, yes!
He pumps all the bullets out of it, and then the gun starts to turn on him in his hand. And even though there aren't any bullets in the gun, it's somehow still a threat.
Yes, he forces it to the ground.
While all of, like, ADRing, you hear all these ADR lines, like, oh, it's coming alive in my hand!
Yeah.
Like, he's clearly not saying any of the dialogue. He drops it to the floor, steps on it, awkwardly pulls another gun out of a holster on his calf, and he's like, suck on that!
And then he's just shooting, like, shooting at the floor.
And then after he's unloaded all the bullets, then the gun flies out of his
hand.
That's
right.
It's hard to keep track of all the guns on this show.
There are a lot of guns, and a lot of guns being used in ridiculous fashions.
Like, in this episode, Reed is shooting at plates hanging outside the window on obvious wires.
Yes.
So you can see. Yeah.
Or in the pilot, the shotgun that he's holding in one shot and then not all the other.
Another, yeah.
Oh, magic.
Yeah.
Shall we move on to episode 3?
Sure.
Episode 3 entitled Skipper the Eye Child.
This is one of the most creepy episodes of the show.
Yeah, I would argue that it's
because
the absolute creepiest.
Because it basically starts with a guy getting raped by a giant eyeball monster.
With a massive penis.
Which, I don't know, there's something about the way that certain segments of the show don't necessarily feel like they fit with the rest of it. Like, in Hell Hath Fury, there's the bit where the temp dies because he's getting all the screwdrivers, like, stabbed into him, which is an actual, like... logistic, like, oh, really, that could actually kill someone.
Right.
Whereas the rest of the humor of the episode is like, oh, they're being chased by a filing cabinet. Oh, they're being chased by a trash can.
You know,
like, that's ridiculous.
Right.
If you were to take telekinetic powers and shoot a screwdriver at someone, yeah, that really could kill them. which gives that scene a bit more of a disturbing quality.
Right.
Then, and while the idea that, yeah, there's an eyeball monster who's raping guys, you know, like, that's ridiculous too, but still, in a way, it's much more viscerally disturbing than some other parts of the show.
Right.
Like, it's not quite as charmingly ridiculous as the rest of it.
But I feel like there's a bit of narration, or not narration, but commentary by Dean Lerner right after that kind of saves it, in which he explains that the man inside the eye suit he was a friend, he was a man he trusted until that day. But Skipper the Eye Child is just a massive story about how Rick Daglas apparently had a child who was inexplicably half-human, half-grasshopper.
I thought they were going to explain it, because I vaguely remember that they did, but
me
then
too.
They didn't. Yeah.
They don't.
He's just a grasshopper.
Yes.
Grasshopper child.
Who died under mysterious circumstances like a couple
involving
years before.
Helicopter blades.
Go ahead and give one a punchline, Nick. I almost called you Jeff.
It's been out for 7 years.
Yeah, but it's only been out in America for... Yeah, 7 years.
Yeah, 7 years.
Yeah, it came on at adult.
I don't know why we always try to keep the pretense of, we don't spoil things, we always do.
We always do, but for the record, I mean, some of you may remember this show did air on Adult Swim starting...
And the Sci-Fi Channel.
And the Sci-Fi Channel starting offhand in the fall of 2004, 2005-ish. But yeah, so you may have seen this and just didn't realize what it is, but that's what this is, Garth Marenghi's Dark Place. Have we said what we need to say about... Well, I mean... There's more to say about Skipper, though, because it's still a very fucked up episode.
Oh, yeah, well, kind of. I mean, once that initial scene is over, it kind of hangs over the rest of the episode.
It does.
Because the rest of the episode is basically him running away with the kid while they try to get the kid.
Yeah, and then there's, of course, a musical number.
Is there?
Day turns into night, yeah.
You know, I always think that there's only, like, that one musical number in the last episode, and I keep forgetting about the one in Skipper the Eye Child.
And one day we'll all meet
in Valhalla.
Because apparently he's Norse.
Why wouldn't he be?
I just...
Fun fact, though, Richard Iowade is part Norwegian.
Ah.
And he helped write the show, so maybe that was Iowade's doing.
Yeah. But that is Skipper the Eye Child, which has... I mean, it's a disturbing concept in itself, but the ending, the resolution of it, is the most disturbing facet.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's unexpected and very violent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this show doesn't shy away from violence.
Yeah,
there's a bit in the first episode that's incredibly bloody and gory.
It's probably the most gory thing the show ever presents.
And there's stuff involving flamethrowers and shotguns and bullet and lots of blood. And I mean, it has.
But never too realistic. It's always ridiculously.
Well, when Liz has her vision at the beginning of the episode,
yeah, there is a bit of like very realistic viscera in her head.
Yeah, because the one thing that makes it ridiculous is not in her vision.
Which is exactly what's happening.
Which is the head that you see when it actually happens.
Yeah, yeah. Watch the episode.
At the end of Skipper the Eye Child, though, yeah, it is pretty bloody and fucked up, because he basically...
And also kind of emotionally fucked up, considering what the whole point of the episode was.
Yeah. I didn't pause to think about the emotional aspects of it, but...
But episode 4, which I'll go ahead and put this out there, is my favorite episode of the series.
I wouldn't say it's mine.
Well, what's your favorite?
I don't know. Let me think about it.
Okay. I was going to ask you before we even started if you wanted to pick out yours and say a bit more, but my favorite is episode 4, which is entitled The Apes of Wrath, in which, through mysterious circumstances, the hospital's supply of water, mostly in the water coolers, is green, and no one seems to notice, and is drinking it, and by way of that, are turning into apes. And it becomes a giant Planet of the Apes parody. Basically,
yeah.
There's even that line at the very beginning when Garth Marenghi is introducing the episode where he's like, you know, in Black Fang, I imagined that a rat could drive a bus and take over the world. In this episode, we've done something very similar. Without giving too much away, thank Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
I'm sorry my accent just kept slipping in and out there, but, you know...
It's harder to do a British accent than people think it is.
I'm usually very, very good at it, but I'm just not trying today. What are we looking at here, sir?
Oh, I was just looking to see if there's any interesting trivia on IMDb. There isn't.
Okay.
Anyway, The Apes of Wrath has some classic moments.
And it's the episode, as I mentioned, that features a guest appearance by Noel Fielding as the head ape. And it's fantastic. It's just... It's got some of my favorite lines, including, you know, not my fault, monkey bastard hands!
Yeah.
Again,
that's the brilliance of Matt Barry.
That's definitely a matter of delivery.
And it's really odd speech patterns.
Yeah, I mean, it's so great. But And one of your favorite lines is in this episode as well.
Yes.
Yes.
Which one are you referring to?
I'm referring to what happens to Liz, what she becomes.
Oh, yeah, when she becomes an ape. She becomes an ape because she drinks the water and Daglas is leading her down the hallway. He's like, I led Liz, now a cruel parody of womanhood, down the hallway. It's so sexist.
Yeah, so this whole show is fucking sexist.
Do you think that was a hallmark of 80s shows?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's part of the show's, like, parody, is the fact that in the 80s, women characters, especially on shows like this that were procedural, were always treated as side characters. They were either constantly in peril, or they were the cause of problems, but very rarely were they, like, the...
helpful.
The hero. They were very rarely the hero, and they were always... There's that wonderful scene, and I forget which episode it's in. I think it's in Skipper the Eye Child, where we just randomly cut to Alice Lowe as Liz Asher, Madeline Moore, whichever one you want to say, where she's walking down the hallway, and just her inner monologue is all about, like,
makeup.
Yeah, like, it's ridiculous. Like, this show is...
It is Skipper the Eye Child, because he's trying to hide the child in his locker, and there's that really creepy music playing.
Yeah.
And then it just cuts to her. The music, all of a sudden, abruptly becomes really sunny. It's like, oh, I love makeup. Now that my cheeks are freshly rouged, I feel like I can face the world again.
Yeah.
Unless that world includes Dr. Rick Daglas, MD. What a jerk, basically. Yeah. And it just cuts back to him. The music stops and goes back to the creepy music.
Because this show, I mean, like I said, this show is absolutely to the letter meant to be a terrible, terrible 80s show, right down to shitty, shitty editing. Which happens a lot.
Oh, yes.
And that's a great example of it. But Apes of Wrath, just amazing. The plot is ridiculous. The things that happen, the lines, the reactions,
the
climactic chase scene.
The chase scene where they're on bicycles, but they're playing motorcycle sound effects.
Yes.
That's ridiculous.
Yes.
Now there's an obstacle course in the middle of the woods.
Yes, that they have to go across to finally finish their fight.
On boxes.
My
theory is that they didn't have the money within the world of the show to buy those, like, blue plastic coolers that you see on water coolers.
Right.
That they fill up with water. So they just put a bunch of cardboard boxes there and then drew those coolers on
they
it
did.
And then just wrote water underneath it.
Yeah.
And that's what they fall into. I think it was supposed to be those coolers, but they could only afford, like, three of them.
But the point is that I feel like the Apes of Wrath, like, showcases, every facet of what makes this show so ridiculous equally. Like, you've got your sexism, you've got your bad editing, you've got your ridiculous music, you've got Matt Berry saying hilarious things, you've got the sexism. It's just, it's all in full force in the Apes of Wrath.
That's a valid point.
Yeah, I mean, that's why it's my favorite, because it's just everything that's great about the show packed into one episode. And this is not to say that the next two episodes aren't amazing, too, especially the final episode, and we'll get to that. But we'll talk next about, shall we move on?
Yes.
Episode 5, which is entitled Scotch Mist, which is... It's kind of an inside joke in a way, because, I mean, I don't know if a lot of Americans would know that there is this massive prejudice against the Scottish within just, you know, England. Flat-out England. Like there's just massive prejudice, like, it's all about, you know, them being gingers, and it's all about, like, their intelligence and their food. And this episode is just chock-full of horrible, like, horrible Scottish stereotypes. The plot being that a mist created by three mystic Scotsmen has taken over the area surrounding the hospital and is killing people one by one.
Right.
Scotch Mist. How do you feel about this one?
It's not my favorite.
It's not mine either. It's really not.
It's got a few good moments, but it's not...
It's
one of the weaker episodes.
It absolutely is. Like, the climactic scene in which Daglas confronts the three, like, mystical Scotsmen goes on for way too long.
Yeah.
There's a stare down that I'm sure is supposed to be funny, but it's just... Matthew Holness staring at three dudes in kilts for, like, 2 minutes solid with no dialogue. It gets kind of boring.
Yeah.
Like, it's ridiculous, but it's...
I did like the, evil bagpipes.
Yes.
The evil flying bagpipes. The bagpipes that laugh at him.
And
that's
then
pretty awesome.
Make his legs glow for some reason.
And take away his pants.
And turn his hair red.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't know why.
It's absolutely ridiculous, but that is not the best. It does have one great moment, which is I think it's Rick Daglas telling the story of why of his troubles with the Scottish, and there's a great turnaround by Matt Berry. I think this scene is actually like on YouTube as an individual clip. Just look for Scotch Mist, and you'll find this scene, a conversation between Daglas and Sanchez. It's fantastic.
Although I do think that Scotch Mist has one of my my favorite moments of the whole show. Which is, there's this creepy music that's such a parody of the Halloween music by John Carpenter. And the camera's just trolling the hallway, and it peers into the employee lounge, and Liz is just standing there absentmindedly combing her hair, while in the background, Dr. Sanchez just, like, has a boombox, like, a Walkman, and just, like, sort of grooving, dancing.
Really awkward Caucasian dancing.
For no reason.
Yeah.
He's just doing it in the background.
And it's even better because it's Matt Berry.
And also the Halloween music is playing.
The Halloween music sound alike.
It sounds just like it.
It sounds exactly like it, yeah. Which was, I'm sure was intentional, obviously. But Scotch Mist, yeah, I mean, that's... It's not that it's a bad episode, but it's I would say that it's the weakest of the entire series. I really would agree.
Yeah.
But we're coming up on one of the strongest, which is, of course, the final episode, entitled The Creeping Moss from the Shores of Shugoth.
Which is a Lovecraft reference.
Is it really?
Yeah, the Shugoth stuff.
Oh, okay.
They don't really make reference to him within the episode, but that whole title is...
Like, within the commentary segments with the actors, playing actors, it's so hard to explain, but Garth Marenghi explains that he wrote the original version of this story when he was in high school, and that he just carried over the ideas presented in it to this episode, which this episode is notable for a million different reasons. Which one do you want to cover first?
I don't know what reasons you're talking about.
Well, how can you not? Well, I'll talk about the plot first. The plot of this episode is that, much as in Scotch Mist, another gaseous form has taken over the area surrounding Dark Place Hospital. And in this case, it is a mist that can turn anyone who comes in direct contact with it into human broccoli. Dr. Sanchez falls in love with the lady patient who comes in originally just to get her big toe shortened because it's like long like a finger, isn't the thing they say?
Yeah.
And in fact gets infected with the creeping moss and becomes a broccoli woman.
Because no one notices the viscous green gas pouring out of the air vent.
It's true. And then from this point on it becomes this tragedy about Dr. Sanchez and this woman. And now he loves her, but she's got to be boiled. And hilarious things happen.
Their romance is awesome because, like, he goes into a room and he's making her dinner because he cares about her.
Oh, the dinner
scene. And she's like, "What is that?"
It's egg and soup.
Here, let me cut up your pork pie. It's great.
It's some of the best, like, line delivery for Matt Berry throughout the entire series.
And that's saying something.
Yeah, it's so great. And just, it's... another one of the great things about this show, and it's not, I don't even think this is just a facet of the age, I think this is just a facet of the fact that it's supposed to be parodying bad production, is how awkwardly some scenes start. And that's one of the most awkwardly starting scenes ever, because the music cuts in kind of in medias res. He's just standing there at the tray doing something, we don't see anything, and then it's egg and soup. Like, it's so ridiculous. Like, it's
and
great.
And the other reason I think that this episode is great is because it's got the other musical number.
That's what I was referring to. Yes, this episode features a song that Matt Berry has actually performed as a musician. He is actually an accomplished musician. He's done a lot of musical performances out in the world. And he does perform this song at most of his shows. A song by the name of One Track Lover, which some people have probably heard of. Even if they haven't heard of this show, they may have heard of this song. What can we say about One Track Lover?
It's awesome.
It is awesome.
It's startling hearing his singing voice in comparison with his speaking voice and the way he looks.
And this is just true of Matt Berry, that he's got this very deep, theatrical voice and this portly Caucasian body, but what comes out of him is, it's at least two octaves higher.
Yeah.
Like, it's ridiculous, and it's natural. There's no fucking with it. This is his actual singing voice. And One Track Lover is just... Like, I mean, I think what it's actually supposed to be parodying, and you'll know this on probably entirely just because of Patton Oswalt, is an actor by the name of Michael Damian, who you may have heard of on Feeling Kind of Patton. You remember Michael Damian? Michael Damian's in town, Mom, and he's going to marry me! You know that old thing. Michael Damian was a soap opera actor, and he had a couple of hit songs. In addition, he also performed the songs on the soap opera. I think it was Young and the Restless. As his character, so like he was a rock star in real life and on the show. The same can be said for Rick Springfield, who was on, I want to say, General Hospital, and he of course did Jesse's Girl. You remember?
Right.
But I think it's a parody of those two people in particular. The idea that he's in the middle of this show and then all of a sudden he is like in a music video featuring the characters,
right?
And it's a great song. You can find numerous versions of this online, including a great live performance by Matt Berry. But there's also the extended version, which ends with an inexplicable Celtic chant by Matthew Holness. It's glorious. One Track Lover, One Track Lover just kind of encapsulates the utter ridiculousness of this show in a matter of a song. Like, it does it perfectly. Am I talking it up too much?
No, I love
you. Seem disinterested.
Lover.
Like,
no, I'm just sort of staring at cool stuff about the show.
What can you tell me, sir?
Nothing.
Well, you're doing fantastically.
I know, right?
I am looking at this section right here, and I feel like I should mention this after we've talked so long about this show. Unfortunately, this show is currently not available on DVD in America. It is only available on Region 2 PAL DVDs, which are only, which I think they're only able to be used in, like, Britain and France, somewhere, like, pretty much just Europe.
Yeah.
Which is a shame. Now, you can find the episodes in parts, although I think you can find them in, like, complete form on YouTube, which is how a lot of people have discovered the show. Or, like I said, every once in a while, it'll still come on Adult Swim really late at night. So if you got a DVR or a cable box, you can check and see what time it might be showing.
Yeah. One thing I like about the DVD cover is that the DVD logo has been changed to Dean VD.
Yeah. Like, I that's one thing you gotta love about this show, is they go balls to the wall. They just go completely all out to make sure that you are engulfed in their universe they've created for themselves. Like,
we need to talk about the interviews. We haven't really talked about the interviews.
We really have. We mentioned them kind of offhand. The interviews and commentaries I have been calling them, they're really just interviews.
Yeah.
With the cast, the fake cast of the fake show, that interspersed within each episode. Those feature some great moments as well.
Oh, yeah. I think the thing about this show that's true of a lot of other British comedy is that it establishes these characters who think that their output or reason in life is much grander than it really is.
It's true.
And in real life, they're really just ridiculously sad characters. And that's true of The Office, and it's true of this. It's certainly true of, like, the IT Crowd or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So you've got, like, Dean Lerner ranting about how great the show is, and Garth Marenghi is just, like, the biggest windbag who ever
lived.
He's
so full of himself. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and in reality, all he does is write books with titles like Ripper, Ripper 4... No, it's Slicer.
Slicer 4.
And Slicer 4. Ripper, which is R-I-P-P-E-R, because it's got period after everyone.
It's an acronym for something we
for
don't
something.
Know.
Crab.
Yeah. Crab! I love Crab.
The Told.
You the know, Told like, Juggers?
Yeah, and he
Are
reads,
you kidding me?
He reads little excerpts from his books at the beginning of each episode, and they're all terrible.
Yeah.
Matt stared in disbelief as his hands fell off. that's probably my favorite line from any of his books.
Yeah, yeah.
Books. Yeah.
Blood.
Blood.
Blood. And bits of sick.
Maggots?
Maggots.
Maggots.
Just, there's a lot of repetition to them, actually. Just,
yeah.
I think the joke here, obviously, is just that, you know, as this Stephen King parody, he's just like, he picks one particularly gross or horrific part of what he's telling you and just repeats it over and over and over until you're overly scared.
Right.
Or just like, why did you just do that? Like, it's Garth Marenghi.
Yeah.
What a character.
And then there's, like, the whole persona of the real people. I mean, we've already established that Garth Marenghi is a douche tool who thinks he's great. But, like, Dean Lerner, it's sort of implied that he has this really dark, decadent lifestyle.
Yeah, you'll note as you watch the show that only the three male cast members are a part of the interviews.
Because
Madeline Wool is nowhere to be found because she's been declared
missing
for many years.
And Dean Lerner presumes that she's in the Eastern Bloc.
Buried in the Eastern Bloc.
If she indeed had a burial, which you mentioned you love the implication that he had something to do with it.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's not just there. Like, they're very, very, very subtle, but, like, as you watch the interviews with Dean Lerner, whenever he mentions Madeline Wool, he very often will note, say something that suggests he might have had something to do with her death and or disappearance. Like, which is really fucking dark for a comedy. I mean, it's a dark comedy, but it's very, very dark.
Yeah, and whenever, what's his name? Todd Rivers, Matt Berry, appears in interviews, he's always, like, in utter deep denial. Like, he's always talking about how he feared the show would be terrible, but now looking at it, oh, it looks great.
Yeah,
it's aged a bit. Ugh.
Never you seen know. Without a glass of scotch.
Yeah.
And just always, it's very clear that Todd Rivers
is a failed actor.
He's a failed actor. He was promised, like, a big amount of fame from this show, and he's never recovered. Like, that's the tragedy of Todd Rivers.
The only thing he's, like, played since is a Nazi.
Yeah. I can play anything. A Nazi. You know, anything. Yeah. Which, I mean, admittedly, that's immediately following a line that is like, was it anti-Semitic or what was it? It was very pointedly racist, though. I think that's the point. But I think I've often wondered if the implication there is that he's a neo-Nazi.
I don't know.
Like, if that all these people are that fucked up.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, because I think Dean Lerner is just like, he's a publisher, he's in the entertainment business, and he's been a part of a lot of dark dealings.
I also think he's secretly gay.
Dean Lerner?
Yeah.
Really?
Because he has, he goes on about how he's never been afraid to make eye contact with another man, how he has a lot of friends who died from AIDS, and in the 80s that was a very gay-centric disease.
This is true.
And he, like talking about, like, weeping, like, on set, things that a typical macho man in the 80s, like, wouldn't do.
This is true.
And so there are all these little hints and subtle implications there that I think are kind of intriguing to the character.
Yeah. So I see you've been looking at this page on Wikipedia for a bit. Are there any bits that you find interesting or topics you think we should cover?
Well, I mean, they talk about, as I already mentioned, the musical soundtrack earned Andrew Hewitt a BAFTA nomination.
How about that?
Let's see.
Wonderful episodes, reception. How did the critics like this show?
Let's see. There is media speculation that the series' high production costs combined with average or poor viewing figures led Channel 4 to decide against commissioning a second series. But it doesn't really say what the critical reception of it was. It's more like, oh, and now it started airing on Adult Swim, and oh, it started airing on Cartoon Network, or whatever. I think up here for the show overview section, people talk about how much people liked it.
I mean, I'm sure it was, that's one thing, like, I mean, there is such a thing as bad British television. Like, as much as I love it, you wouldn't call the Kevin Bishop show a good sketch comedy show.
No, you wouldn't.
But it does have its moments. One of them being Karen Gillan in general.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is that show is kind of terrible.
And it's odd that you watch so much of it, because it really is kind of like the most anti-American.
It's massively anti-American.
It's ever existed.
Well, I mean, sometimes I'm kind of anti-American, so.
Oh, well, yeah, we all are, but yeah. Still, that's like, that shows, you know, meat and cheese, I don't know, I made up that expression.
Yeah, that was really bizarre. but enough about Kevin Bishop, who was in Muppet Treasure Island, look it up.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, what more can we say here? Are we pretty much done with talking about the show?
I think so.
It's our first best TV series of all time, so I just wanted to make sure we gave it its due.
Yeah. You asked me what my favorite episode was.
Yes.
And you know what? On their own, I wouldn't say there is an episode that's my favorite.
Really?
Like, just looking at the episodes on their own, I'm like, meh.
Is there an episode
for all six of them just on their own?
But is there an episode that when you first like started watching this show, like, because I brought this year to your attention like a couple, like maybe a year ago,
at least a year ago.
Yeah, at least a year ago. And but like, was there ever an episode that like when you were like, I want to watch some Dark Place, but I don't want to watch the entire series? Was there an episode that was very often repeated?
I can't really think of one. I really like the show as a whole,
yeah.
Actually, because then you get, because it's just short enough to be watchable in one day.
It's like, the seasons of Frisky Dingo.
Exactly. Like, you can watch all of it in one day, so you get all of the great moments in one.
Right.
Like, in one viewing. Let's see. I really like Once Upon a Beginning, just because I'm a huge fan of the Just Leave bit with the cat.
Yeah.
I like the Apes of Wrath, I like the Creeping Moss, I like Skipper, I like all of them, basically, except for kind of Scotch Mist.
And Scotch Mist is kind of
it's got its moments.
Yeah.
That moment where Daglas is telling that long story about the nightmarish experience he had in Scotland is rather awesome.
Yeah.
It makes you never want to go to Scotland.
I want to go to Scotland.
I know you do.
But anyway, yeah, so I guess we are down to we've talked it up. Do you have any final thoughts, Nick Melton, on Garth Marenghi's Dark Place? It's the best TV series of all time!
It's an awesome show, and it needs to come out on DVD.
In America, yes.
It needs to be replayed on American channels more often so that people can see how awesome it was.
And promoted more, because when it does come out Adult Swim, they don't promote
because,
it anymore.
Because, like, everybody knows the IT crowd, everybody knows The Office, most people know The Mighty Boosh.
Yeah.
But to me, The Mighty Boosh is nowhere near as awesome as this show.
I would actually agree, yes.
And, yeah, The Office is a great show. And the IT Crowd is a great show, and I love both of them dearly, but let Garth Marenghi have its chance.
It's true.
You know, I mean, it has been. I mean, it came out in 2004, so it's been a long time since
it's re-aired on Adult Swim at least once a year since that time.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're trying, but they need to make it. They need to promote it better. I think
they do,
because it's really an awesome show.
It really is. So definitely seek it out on YouTube. My final thoughts. My final thoughts are going to kind of explain what's going to happen with this. Like, this was our first best TV series of all time, but we do have plans in the works. We do have other shows that we already know for certain we're going to cover as a best TV series. I can think of some seasons of shows I'd like to cover. And we got some episodes I'm sure we're going to cover. Because, I mean, there are some really masterful episodes of some TV shows. I'm sure you could think of some right now, Melton.
I can.
This is going to be an experiment, but I'm very glad that Garth Marenghi's Dark Place was our first.
Yes.
Not just because it's so short and because it's a little bit simpler to talk about, but because it truly does deserve the recognition.
Oh, Romford is a real place.
It is! How about it?
It's a large suburban town in northeast London and the administrative headquarters of the London Borough of Havering. It is located 14.1 miles northeast of Charing Cross and is one of the major metropolitan centers identified in the London Plan.
For some reason, I thought the setting of the show was Romford. I thought it was a joke.
No, Romford.
Okay. Well, how about it?
Boom.
It's real. You know what else is real?
That's one thing I want to mention. One more thing that we mentioned while we were watching it. But the way that the show is, like, the exterior of the hospital is just a crappy little model.
Yeah.
And whenever Daglas is up on the roof, which is usually at the end of every episode, you can see, like, the city around
massive
them.
Cityscape.
But when you see the model of the hospital, it's just in the middle of this wasteland with no grass or trees.
It looks like something Tim Burton would have thought of.
Yeah, like, it's not anywhere near a metropolitan center at all. Except for when he's on the roof.
Exactly.
Just yet another continuity error that they have for no reason.
Just another taste of the genius that is Garth Marenghi's Dark Place. The best TV series of all time!
Exactly. Continue what you were saying, though.
I mean, that's about it. I'm just saying it was our first, and it deserves that honor.
Yes.
That's all I'm saying. So you feel good about our chat, Mr.
I
Melton?
Do.
We feel we've given this show its due.
Yeah,
I do. You feel
awesome.
we've introduced it to a new generation.
A new generation. Yay.
I think, definitely check it out. Like I said, you will almost absolutely, I can guarantee you will find the complete episodes on YouTube, if not in their full, like, 24-minute forms, in parts. And just don't be a bitch about it. Watch the parts. You will be delighted.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So that was, for the fifth time, Garth Marenghi's Dark Place, the best TV series of all time! And the first of those.
Yes. Very, there are many more to come.
Very historic. Don't know how that's gonna go, but it was a good one to go with.
I like talking about TV rather than just movies for a change. It's cool.
Yeah, we should move it around a little more like this, you know? I don't know why I used that term, that was really strange. But that's it. I guess, is that it?
Yep, I'm fine.
Okay. Wow, you're noncommittal. That's the OUP for this week. I'm Jeff Heatherly.
I'm Nick Melton.
Go experience 7 days. Good night!
It's egg and soup.
Here, let me cut up your pork pie.
You and he were buddies, weren't you?
Get me, Reed!
When I joined this hospital, I was strictly solo. You were the first real buddy I ever had. But if you and he wish to be buddies again, I won't stand in your way.
Am I holding a crock of shit?
Tell me something. Is this hospital called St. Crock of Shit?
All right, everybody, calm down.
Meet there in 10, you can scrub my legs.
We gotta stop.